Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Banging Book Club!
Woo! Hello! Bum, ba-da, bum,
bum. Yeah!
I am Lucy Moon.
I'm Hannah Whitten.
I'm Lena Norms.
And
you are you.
Yeah, you are you. We respect you as people. Today.
Find your own identity.
This is September's book and we have been discussing, reading, and about to discuss Middlesex by Geoffrey Eugenides.
Yes, we have.
What a man, what a man, what a mighty weird man.
That's the theme of today's podcast.
Also, the struggles of reading, because I will be the first to admit I have not finished the book. The other two have managed it, but we had to postpone recording twice.
Yeah, this is true. This has been the biggest Banging Book Club struggle.
Oh my gosh.
It's been one big bang.
It's been hard.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
Evolution joke, who liked it?
I wouldn't be surprised if only 10 people listened to this, because that would be the amount of people that managed to get to the end of this book.
Or they're all like, fuck no, I'm not reading that, I'm just going to listen to what they think about it.
But I reckon this will have that longevity of like search history longevity, because people who read this book will be Googling afterwards.
Next up has changed you, man. You're an SEO monster.
General housekeeping, if you haven't read the book and you don't want it to be spoilt for you, then go watch the video on Lucy's channel. Yeah. This podcast will be full of spoilers of Middlesex.
Yeah. I got it spoiled for me earlier today, so I'm prepared.
We just filled Lucy in on the plot.
Hannah was like, you know that main character? Has he died yet? And she's like, no. And then she's like, she dies.
I mean, he dies.
Like, sorry, yeah.
It was a he. Lefty dies.
Cut that out, Lucy. Okay.
So I think, Lena and Hannah, if you lead the discussion, because you know way more about it than me,
That's cool.
I will interject...
I feel like you're us from the past, though. You'll be useful because you remember the beginning of the book and we only remember the end.
You can be like,
it's so true. I do remember the beginning well.
Yeah, and it's a long book and I don't...
It really is. So I say I didn't make much progress. I hit like 250 pages.
Yeah.
Like, so any normal book, you
I would have finished it.
You could have read two books anyway.
Oh, wait. Shall we do our sound
review? Oh, yeah.
Sound review. Our sound review. Okay. Okay. Let's go around this way. So, Lena... Great.
That was a proper graph, that was.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do pretty much exactly what you did, but half of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh shit, I need to go to Banging Book Club.
Wow. And then mine would be...
Wow.
Yeah. Did you guys find it got more interesting towards the end?
Yes.
For those people who are struggling.
Yeah.
It's not just that the end was valuable, it's the end was valuable because of the beginning.
Because of everything that happened. And I hate that, because it's just
it felt so pointless while you were in it.
Whilst you're in it, you're like, why? And then at the end, like, I feel so enriched.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. He's kind of like a professor that tricks you into doing a really shit exercise in lectures that you're all like, this makes me feel dumb. And then he's like, tricked ya, you just learned something. And you're like, oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah, no,
like, exactly. I kind of hate you, but I did get the information. Thanks, Geoffrey.
Basically.
So, one in every 2,000 babies is born with ambiguous genitalia. They tell us that in the book. It's quite exciting.
Ooh.
It's something that I kind of knew but didn't know and still don't really understand, but I now understand more about. But... I thought an interesting question to ask at the beginning was, if this book isn't just about sex and the fact that this main character is intersex, what is it about? If you had to explain it to somebody without saying, this is a book about somebody who's intersex, what would you say it was about?
Family drama.
I would say it's about generational immigration.
So the Telegraph review that I just read on the computer said that it was the story of a gene through the ages. So it's the story of how a gene... So really, it's the story of how a gene passes down.
Because it feels historical.
Which I really liked. I think that is kind of what it's about.
Yeah.
But for me, like, when I finished the book, I realised that... Because, again, like, we've kind of been chatting about it on Twitter, and we were talking about it, and just being like, what is... It's not all about just to, like, the intersex issues. It's about loads of stuff. What is this book even fucking about? Why are we reading this? What's going on? And I thought part of it was just about the only time that you see all of these characters at the same time is during their adolescence. Like, where we really meet every set of characters is during their adolescence and when they grow up.
Oh yeah, because as soon as they become an adult,
they
passes kind of, on to the next generation, and you ignore.
They become the centre.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true.
Or maybe more as soon as there is another generation of teenagers. Yeah. That's when it passes.
Because you're focusing on Desdemona and Lefty at the beginning, and then as soon as Milton and Tessie become adolescent, then you're focusing on them, and Desdemona and Lefty's lives are kind of like secondary. And then as soon as Callie is becoming into her adolescence, then it's focusing on her, and Milton and Tessie are secondary.
Yeah. Interesting. So that's my first topic, was adolescence, and how, like, is this book just about becoming... And also, I think we can talk about that with perversion, because there's lots of stuff where people are doing stuff just because it's wrong, or they realise they want to do something, but they realise it's wrong.
Okay, you know how you mentioned you wanted to talk about perversion in relation to the book Perv, which we read a few months ago for the book club? So I think we just have to go straight in and talk about incest.
Yeah, I think incest is at the beginning.
Straight into the incest.
It's a good place to start.
So Desdemona and Lefty are brother and sister, and then they become husband and wife, and Milton and Tessie are... second cousins, which is legal, that's fine, whatever.
no biggie.
But it's more the brother and the sister thing.
How did we feel about that?
To be honest, like, I was so invested in their love story.
Yeah, I was.
Like, it tricks you. It tricks you again.
But are we tricked, or are we just being showed what's right?
Yeah, I don't know. But then, the reason that we're taught to find incest gross is because it can fuck up the babies, if you have children with, like...
But is Callie fucked up?
Genetically, lots of stuff can go wrong,
more than that, and, like, Cal's life now, so him and as an adult, and, like, Callie in her adolescence, you know, has a more difficult life now. Doesn't mean they're, like...
Did we say the bit about how we're referring to Callie?
Okay, so... The character that is intersex is narrating the whole book from when he's, like, in his 40s. Mm. And so he's presenting and living as male at that point, and that's Cal. Yeah. So when we're talking about the narrator voice, we're going to use he pronouns.
Yeah.
And then when we're talking about Callie when she's younger in the book, the narrator uses she. So we're basically just doing what the narrator does. We're going to do what the narrator does, and then there's a point in the book where Callie turns to Cal when... he's like 14, and so we'll then switch to he again.
Yeah. Cool.
Just FYI. If you get confused by the pronouns.
That's what we're doing. That's the plan.
Back to incest.
back to the incest.
Bring us back to the hot topics.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting how they mentioned that in their village, incest is kind of normalised in a way, like, we don't really talk about it, but it really does happen.
I think it's just the lack of suitors. So you just marry each other, and then
but the fact that everyone's related for your... relative to me is something that's so, like, alien,
especially one that you've grown up with. Like, it's all well and good being able to fall for, like, a long lost brother or sister that you've never met before and haven't grown up with.
Yeah
so there must be something about the normality of it that made
it
kind of more acceptable.
In love, to the extent that Lefty was buying prostitutes that looked like Desdemona.
What the reason for them not having that many suitors in the village? Does anyone remember?
I think it was just, like, everyone was leaving to move to the city.
Yeah, so that's
and
what
not
is
even
interest-
that. It was people... There weren't enough children being born.
Oh, yeah.
And then also...
the men went off to war and stuff. Wasn't there, like,
First World
War
had just happened.
Yeah, so this the whole idea of colonialism comes in really early, because actually they've lost a lot of their population to things, external circumstances outside of their country. And with the industrialisation, which is very Western, they've, like, lost... They've lost a lot of their, like, hot people, basically.
The hot toddy has been robbed. No one's been procreating.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
During the war.
Yeah, people just haven't been having babies. And also, a lot of people do have, like, issues because of the incest.
Mm.
That's implied as well. Like, yeah, I don't know what, but people die younger and stuff.
But they use, they kind of know it's wrong for a long time, but then they use this next war and this next, like, uprising to erase themselves and go to America and
completely
become...
reinvent themselves.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Desdemona and Lefty's courtship on the boat?
Yeah!
It's just so beautiful.
Okay, so if that was just like a film in itself, I would 100% watch that like a million times. Yeah. In fact, I did actually go back and watch Titanic because of it and then turned it off just as they saw the iceberg.
So the first.
So that was my week.
How was yours?
Because I find
I watched
it really...
the second half.
I like how it's like a secret, like forbidden. Well, not forbidden, but it's got layers.
Yeah.
I like the layered level of the relationship.
I think that they genuinely trick themselves into believing that they've just met.
It's believable, though. That's the thing. I think it is not wrong. I don't know. Do you think it's wrong?
After reading Perv, I'm just like, I don't know if I would call it wrong.
I think Desdemona
shouldn't have had children.
Yeah, Desdemona was right to have been freaked out. I wish she hadn't like beaten herself up so much over it because it ultimately had a huge impact on the relationship.
But also, there wasn't that much contraception in those days. Like, she ended up cutting her fallopian tubes. Like, she sterilized herself.
Yeah.
In order to make sure she had no more children. That's insane.
And she, like, stayed away from him for, like, a year and a half. And
yeah,
like, that was the beginning of their ruining
she
of their relationship.
She almost ruined their marriage because she didn't want to have sex with him because she was scared of having like...
No communication in any of
kid.
That.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Frustrating to read because it was like, you're literally not talking, you're husband and wife, and you're just not communicating.
Yeah.
Come on, get your shit together, guys. It's not how
I know
it's
the 1950s, but...
so, yeah, and then... It's hard because we're kind of doing... We have to do it chronologically. Well, we don't, but, like...
The themes fall very naturally throughout, and but specific examples.
So then there's Milton
and
Tessie's courtship.
The clarinet.
Hot!
Yeah.
I did not know I could have like some kind of orchestra fetish, but I think I have now.
It was so sexy. Like, but him weirdly, playing clarinet on her. And I was trying to picture it in my head, like, how is this working, like, logistically?
Yeah.
I like the ambiguity of it. When it was written.
Yeah. So, like, basically, for those of you who haven't read it, which I'm basically thinking there might be some. no offence, but, like, you know. I don't know.
It was a long book.
It was a long book. I wouldn't they... Tessie and Milton are second cousins who live very close to each other, grew up quite close to each other.
Yeah.
And they have this courtship where Milton plays the oboe and starts playing...
I thought it was the clarinet.
Sorry, the clarinet.
Get your instruments,
I know. and he starts playing music into Tessie, which is the sweetest thing I've ever heard. Like, when he just, like, says that he's, like, making her alive and playing music into her body, I was just like, I want to die.
It's beautiful. And it's really ambiguous the way that it's described. And a lot of the sex is ambiguously described and very poetically described.
Poetically,
and so you have
to,
like, fill in the gaps and figure out what's going on, but maybe you don't have to. Maybe you just gotta feel it.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Dundee's probably very good in bed, just saying. And the third adolescence
is Callie's.
Is Callie's. Which is the one that kind of breaks the plot and makes the plot. That's the one that's like,
make and break.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the object? I know you've got stuff to say.
Okay, so the object is basically Callie's object of desire. And she isn't.
She says
named.
She's not naming her for like just to protect her identity, but also like it's fictional. So
but no one else in the book has the same privilege to be hidden. Like
apart from Chapter 11.
Chapter
11.
Her brother's called Chapter 11.
Maybe she's got a thing for people who don't
have
actual
names. What was the name of Chapter 11?
We don't know.
No, as in like the chapter. Is there an 11th
I know,
chapter?
I was wondering that if like Chapter 11 was born during Chapter 11. The chapters aren't numbered like that. Callie has a crush in school on a girl who she calls the obscure object. And it pisses me off. So I understand that Jeffrey Eugenides is doing it as a literary device in calling this woman object, clearly trying to make a point, but it wasn't very clear to me what the point that he was making.
I hate
and
that.
So, and because the point wasn't clear to me, it just sounded horribly sexist to me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, make your points clearer, and then maybe I'll be like, oh, that was really clever. But nope, to me it was just sexist.
Yeah, there can be authors who are like, I'm making a point! And everyone's like, what's the point? And I'm making a point! Look at this point!
What's the point though, no, Jeffrey?
Jeffrey, what was your point? Why did you call it the object?
Jeffrey, UK.
Do you think it's interesting a bit how how you think Callie is gay, and then it's like, oh no, just a man.
Yeah,
like that's
oh, so like the kind of it like, doesn't having to heteronormative.
Yeah, it feels heteronormative.
But Tessie's mum's gay, and that's very clear in the book.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah,
she's
that's
off
true.
Doing her crazy.
That's true.
Like, oh, I'm a party girl.
Mm-hmm.
I can't version of lesbianism.
Yeah, and bear in mind, I haven't read far enough into the book to see Callie being attracted to women. Or Cal. Yeah.
Callie.
Yeah, Callie at this point.
Yeah.
Callie's like a fully fledged lesbian, and then suddenly she just turns into a straight dude.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think all of their adolescence are kind of shrouded in this embarrassment, and this kind of like, oh, this is wrong. But And it's weird as well, because I think it's like fun and effect, so like, I would say the most scandalous kind of sexual perversion in any of their adolescence was like the incest.
Oh yeah.
And you think that like things get crazier as the generations go on, and like modern times make things more perverted, and I'm like, no, actually Callie is somebody who's had a genetic thing happen to them and is attracted to women. She's probably the most heteronormative person. Well, not heteronormative, what's the word, like, I don't know, I'm trying to say this.
She's not attracted to any of her relatives.
Basically,
so that's
the craziest, most controversial sex happens at the beginning with the grandparents in the olden times, not the new. Mm. And you think it's always the grandparents who are scandalised by their children, but actually, I think it would be more the children that are scandalised by their parents.
Mm. Yeah.
Weird. Good point.
One
of the things that bothers me is that she like fully identifies as female growing up. There's no implication anywhere other than her attraction to women that she might not be.
Yeah, it doesn't occur. Yeah. You know, so there's lots of narratives where it's like, I just knew,
blah, blah. Callie never just knew that she was a dude. She thought she was a woman.
Until she read someone else's study on her.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing is that she wanted to be a woman so much that she was just like, it was making her depressed that she wasn't growing boobs, and it was making her depressed that she didn't have a period. And then it wasn't until she knew she was different because she had her crocus, like her massive clit, or whatever you want to call it, crocus.
Mm.
And then suddenly when she finds out through the doctor's report that she has male chromosomes and male hormones and her crocus is actually a small dick, then she's just like, I guess I'll live as a man now.
So do you think it was too
fast? I was just like, I couldn't believe it. And like, it just wasn't believable to me. And then suddenly Cal is a guy and Cal's a he. And I wanted to see some more conflict within Cal of being like, but do I feel male or do I feel female? And like, what is my gender? But it was just like, well, I guess it's easier if I just present as a dude, irrelevant of whether or not I feel on the inside. And I think he chose to present as male because his body was very much male and his attraction to women meant that he could pass as straight, and that was just generally easier.
Ooh. It feels like Jeffrey.
I love how like professionals Jeffrey. At the Times and the Independent always like to come by their surname. We're like, no, Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
We know your first name.
Jeff.
We're gonna use it.
I feel like Jeff probably didn't do as much research into like the experiences of intersex people or trans people, partially because this was published in 2002, will have taken a bit longer to write than probably a year.
Mm. So shout out to Ben on Goodreads, who is a Bang Book Club member, great guy. He in his review,
Ben Babcock,
yeah.
That guy.
He wrote a review on the Banging Book Club Goodreads page of Middlesex, and in it mentioned that apparently somewhere online it says that Jeffrey Eugenides didn't actually talk to any intersex people about their experiences and just apparently wrote the book as if like you know, putting himself into the shoes of someone who's intersex, like, oh, this is what I think it would be like, rather than actually talking to anyone who's intersex.
That would explain.
And that's why it's just not believable to me at all. I'm like, no, where is the... I mean, I'm not saying that every person who's intersex or trans or whatever has to go through a crazy, like, gender confusion, but this, I was just not buying.
Yeah. And also just because of what we know of Callie, I feel like she's very careful, she's very calculated, she's very, like, I don't know, I feel like... I feel like I know her, and I feel like she would have thought about this more.
She's a bit impulsive, though. She does, like, go and follow a tank on a bike.
Yeah, and
in
then
the middle
stick
of
a
the
finger
riots.
Up her friend in the middle of no... Like, just out in the open. She's trying
stick
to hide...
Stick finger
she's
up
hide,
her friend.
Yeah, she's trying to hide everything. And then she's sitting on a swing, and she just, like, puts a finger up her friend.
Wait, I don't remember that bit.
Yeah, and then her brother, his like, Jerome catches them.
Oh, that... Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we mean the object.
Yeah.
And she's having weird,
yeah.
unconceptual
Yeah, she's just there
sex.
Sitting on a swing, and then she's just, like... Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. And then Jerome comes out, and I'm like, you were trying to hide this, Kelly.
You should see my face right
Think
now.
Think it through.
Anyway. That's so
Yeah,
weird.
I don't know. I think the character development was weird. For that generation, at least. I believed Desdemona and Lefty.
Yeah, but that's partially because it's... It must be much easier to put yourself in the head of an incestuous couple, because you probably know what they're thinking if they're straight and... Mm. have a forbidden romance.
Yeah. Rather like, than, so I think... So he's good at writing controversial romance, but maybe not good at writing the
gender identity.
Gender yeah. conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and we've got to also place when it was published in 2002. Mm. Obviously, it would have taken a couple of years more to write than... Mm. Well, it's long. I'm assuming that means it took a while to write.
He didn't... He wrote Virgin Suicides in 1993, so it literally took him like 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he could have just been sunbathing for like 5 minutes. Who really knows what you were doing, Jeffrey?
It's definitely... Jeffrey, if you're listening.
What
were you doing?
Listening, though, this happened.
I know, yeah.
I forget. Anyway, he went.
Jeff.
But yeah, could have been... But at the time, how... I don't know. I feel like trans issues have progressed in terms of visibility and in terms of like... Loudness.
This is more intersex than trans, though.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
there is a but transition.
That's
so
how we're so aware of gender identity struggles.
But I'm surprised how much I've heard about this book from, like, very modern, like, Tumblr kind of groups where everyone's like, you've got to read Middlesex. And I'm like, do I? Do I have to?
Do I? I've read it
now.
I don't know.
Like, I feel like it's still got this huge prestige around it that I don't think it
I think
quite
it,
lives up to.
I think its groundbreakingness isn't in its depiction of an intersex character.
Yeah.
That's one of the least... convincing parts of it for me.
Mm. I think the most impressive thing about the book is the
but
Odyssey.
But I'm not intersex, so.
True.
Yeah.
Is the Odyssey level of, like, how it tells the story.
It's a yeah. Greek tragedy.
Yeah.
You just read a Greek tragedy.
Exactly. Okay, like, so I've just put this as a note to mention at some point because I fucking love it. When they talk about Chekhov's theory of, like, if there's a pistol in the scene,
yes.
at some point in the scene, the pistol has to go off.
It's like, if
there's... And, like, they reference
that
at the end as well.
If there's a pistol on the wall in Act 1, Scene 1, by, like, Act 3, Scene 2, the pistol has to go
yeah.
off.
And then they foreshadow that the whole way through, and
yeah.
then I think it's kind of like the
because
crocus.
There was...
Her crocus is, like, the pistol that has to go off.
Yeah.
And, like, it has to be discovered. It's going to
yeah.
happen.
It's
Shit's going to kick
it's
off.
It's there the whole time.
And so clever.
I like that.
So, yeah, I love the way it was told. Like, you're right. It's, like,
yeah.
the I don't
it's
know.
It's clever and it's poetic.
What did we think about the stuff about being Greek and the idea of race? Because they obviously are immigrants.
That stuff.
Yeah.
And they moved to this area that has other kinds of ethnicities in it, and they find that hard to deal with. And I think we have this idea of, like, immigrants understand other immigrants. And it's like, when you... It's kind of like internalised misogyny. Like, when you oppress a group of people, it's I don't know.
I love that. I thought that was, like, a really...
That was really fun,
I thought
yeah.
that was a really good bit. Or just general themes, not just a bit. It was, like, throughout the whole thing. But especially, like, they are... Like, their family is oppressed in some way because they are an immigrant Greek family.
Hmm.
But then they're also oppressed because they're, like, Greeks from Turkey. Not
yeah,
Greeks.
Yeah, you're not, like, real Greeks.
Not Greeks from Greece. And then... in their hierarchy, in their head, they're, like, better than black people because they're white, but then the white Americans are, like, ahead of them in the racial hierarchy because
yeah.
they're not immigrants and they're not Greek. Mm. And it's and also because 'cause they get rich from the fire and from the insurance money, they can move to, like, a white suburban neighbourhood. But they
get rich because of race riots.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's horrific.
They get rich because of race riots, and then they move to a white suburban area where they find it really hard to find a house or, like, an agency that will, like, sell them a house because they're Greek.
Mm.
And then they're, like... Then they experience racism towards them, but then Milton's just insanely racist to anyone that's, like, not Greek.
Really?
yeah.
That's
and it's that
dynamic.
Thing about... incest as well. It's like there is something, I think, that, like, you know, Desdemona has this problem where she's like, oh, I don't want them to marry each other. I'll get her to marry somebody else because I don't want my children to also marry within the family. But then at the same time, she wouldn't let them marry anybody else.
She wouldn't let them marry anyone that's not, like, Greek.
Yeah, like, oh, black.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
God forbid.
Like, no.
Yeah. Wait, isn't... There was a storyline where... there was a mini storyline. Callie had a black friend. Very briefly. There is. I just remembered. There's just, like, a random bit in the middle. Callie is, like, when she's really quite young, she's friend... I think it's before they move to the white suburban place.
Okay.
And the neighbourhood they live in, like, there's a lot of, like, black families that live there. And Callie makes friends with, like, one of the kids. And Milton's just like, nope, you're never to see him again.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was so brief.
Just like, no.
Do you think he was kind of like, oh, I should probably put in... that in somewhere, and then and it just didn't actually explore it.
I feel like Jeffrey tried to explore everything in this.
He's just trying to...
I think no stone has been left unturned.
Well, every stone's been nudged at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's been kind of like, yeah.
If you look, you know, like when you try and make a... take a glance at the fence, yes, then maybe
try a few.
You know, sorry, when you try and flip a pancake and then you cut half of it off? Like that kind of stone turning.
That's great.
That's going to go down. It's just like reviews.
I like a few Lugandas. Okay.
Yeah.
I love Jungle Book.
Let's review that instead of the Jungle Book.
So there's no sex in Jungle Book. Thank God. Can you imagine what kind of sex there would be?
Moving on. It's like the beast.
Moving on from Mowgli sex.
What's next, Lena?
Talking about, so this threads into religion and race, so this idea of culture and superstition. So Desdemona is convinced this fucking baby is a boy, and they have this big argument because she's like, it's science, mum, it's a girl.
But and then she, like, has the spoon.
The spoon is dangling over the belly, it's a boy.
Desdemona's spoon. And I thought that was so
interesting.
I liked all the tradition and how they'd find all of the Greek food and get it, like, either shipped over or they'd find it in shops. And
the, like, Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, and making sure that...
Yeah, the idea of the Mediterranean diet making you live longer.
I don't think you got to that bit. That's the reason why Desdemona stays alive for so long. She's got such a healthy diet.
Because she loves cooking, doesn't she? Yeah. Cooking is like her...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But the other thing about the superstition, do you reckon, because you know how Desdemona saved Milton when he was in the war, she prayed to this saint and promised that he would go to Greece
and look after St. Christopher's and church
and make a church or help rebuild the church or something. And then they're about to go on holiday to this place so he can fulfill that promise, and then a war breaks out so they don't go, and then that's the reason why Callie can then go on holiday with the object, and that's when everything kicks off and then Milton dies.
As soon as you started saying it, I was like, I can see where this is going.
So he never fulfilled
that didn't click in my head.
So he never fulfilled his promise, and then he dies in a horrible accident.
Clever. So in some ways, like, Jeffrey is like letting that come true, and I think there's lots of stuff where he's not just like, science is right. Yeah. And these people are wrong because they're old and ethnic. Well, that's but like, he doesn't have that easy approach that other writers do. He's like, he lets their... The logic of their culture. It gives as much precedence as the science. Can I read a little bit that I really enjoyed? And it's about... It's kind of... So basically a lot of the time, like... Callie refers to herself as like a frog, or she talks about weird amphibian references, which is like the kind of evolution thing. Mm-hmm. And then like they talk about Sophocles and how loads of people think the first human was intersex.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then like that's, and you know, like, the whole like things about yin and yang, where it's like you broke apart and you have two sides of yourself.
Yeah, and the then, first like, person was male and female.
And the there's a transsexual he meets at the end that says like, we don't need somebody else because we're both. We're a whole person. I was like, holy fuck.
Her name Zara? Zoe?
Yeah. Begins Zara? I don't know. But this is the part where I think Callie is like finally getting on with the object. Mm. And it says, do you remember my frog heart? In Clementine Stark's bedroom, it had kicked
Clementine
off.
Clementine Stark is the girl that she is kissing, learning to kiss from when they're younger.
Oh, okay.
In Clementine Stark's bedroom, it had kicked off from a muddy bank, moving between two elements. Now it did something even more amazing. It crept onto land. Squeezing millennia into 30 seconds, it developed consciousness. While kissing the object's belly, I wasn't just reacting to pleasurable stimuli, as I had been with Clementine. I didn't vacate my body, as I had with Jerome. Now I was aware of what was happening. I was thinking about it. And then it's like this idea of like it, like coming, like she's evolving as a person.
Is her crocus so like a tadpole and then a frog?
Oh, yeah. Possibly.
Because then it's like coming out.
And it's this whole like coming onto land. I don't know.
And then also surely that's to do with sexual like engorging and swelling and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because her crocus is still like pretty sizable.
That's a good crocus you got there, Callie.
That's a good crocus you got there.
Yeah, I wonder how... I don't know.
Is there any more of the sex?
Yeah, oh my god. Can we find an extract of the weird unconsensual sex?
Oh, I definitely didn't highlight that because it was horrible, but I can try and find it.
Do you want to talk about it? I told Lucy about it. I want to hear your description of it.
So, when
Callie and the object kind of sort of have a sexual experience together, and we're not sure if it was rape.
Yeah, because like, so basically, they're sharing a bed, and she pulls the covers off her and stares at her a lot. And then, over the course of 10 minutes, she slides nearer and nearer. She flung her arms across her waist.
Definitely sounds like the wrong...
Okay, here's the bit that, like, would incriminate her in court. My arm grew stiff. It began to throb and finally went numb. The object might have been drugged or in a comatose.
Yeah.
Still, I sensed an alertness in her skin and in her muscles. After a long while, I plunged ahead. I took off her t-shirt and lifted it up. I gazed at her naked belly for a while. I bowed my head. Anyway, she kissed the object's belly and then slowly worked her way up. And then she talks about the frog heart. Anyway, the next day they didn't mention it.
And it's all happening at
night.
And
then she says the reason that the object never mentions it is because the object wanted no dramatics, no guilt, no show of romance.
Or she was just unconscious and didn't know what was happening.
She's asleep!
Maybe she's asleep! What is happening, Callie?
And then she gives these weird signs that aren't really signs. But the other implication is that she lifts her hips when she wants to take her pants off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's like, she's responsive. But then Callie acknowledges that that's the only responsiveness that she gets. But she's just like, that means she wants it. Yeah.
Mm.
Keep going. She lifted her hips for me to take off her pants. But she was also unconscious the whole time. What?
I was worried.
I don't understand
what
conclusions I'm supposed to draw from this.
I don't know.
Mm.
But at the end, she does kiss her. But I'm like, what if she thought that was the first time anything had happened?
But I feel like if your friend just got run over and just beat up your brother, then maybe you would...
Would you kiss me if
maybe
I did
you would
that?
Cradle them and give them a little kiss.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I just think it was a really weird treatment of that. I was like, they could have just experimented consensually. Mm. I don't see how that would have taken away from the great literary
Because then
merit.
It also makes... Callie, who later does become a freak because she's in he is in a freak show. But then it makes the intersex person an actual
predator
pervert. Like, if that is...
Well, now I know that he didn't actually talk to anybody intersex, now I'm a little bit more indignant about it, to be honest.
Well, yeah. We don't know that. That's what Ben said on Goodreads.
I trust Ben.
Yeah, I trust Ben a lot as well.
He's a teacher.
Yeah.
Oh, is he actually? Yeah. I need to look up this Ben man.
Ben Babcock.
He's great.
At the end, sorry, Lucy, but at the end they talk about, the way females act. And the way that the doctor diagnoses her is so about gender performance and so about, like, so if I can read some out, because I like to do that.
I don't know how I felt about that.
And this isn't actually part of what the doctor says. This is just part of the narrative. It's part of the narrator.
But the doctor also does believe this.
Yeah. Females tend to smile at their interlockers. Interlocutors.
Whatever, I don't know.
Females tend to smile at their interlocutors more than males do. Females pause and look for signs of agreement before continuing. Males just look to the middle distance and hold forth. Women prefer the anecdotal, men the deductive. Females tend to smile at their... Oh, no, I've already highlighted that twice because I thought it was so important.
There's more,
but, and there is more. Did I highlight it?
It's also, like, Callie is very aware of, like, when he is performing as male, of recognizing that at one point he like tries to look at his shoe and realizes that he looked at his shoe by kind of like looking backwards and flicking his foot up rather than looking down like straight at it, or the way that he looks at his nails by bending his fingers in or stretching them out, because like apparently one way is male and one way is female.
Oh, God, yeah. But I've never thought about that.
But there's, like, all of these little bodily cues and stuff that the doctor picks up on, and it's just like, oh, she's doing all these things the female way. And it's like, well, she was raised female. But then also it's just like, I think that's behaviour that we learn. I don't think that's, like, inherently, like...
But this is before they've really talked... When is this? The 70s? This is, like, before, like, they wrote, like...
Before postmodernism, maybe? I don't know.
Before gender trouble.
Pomo.
Judith Butler. Was like, I think gender is a performance, mates. And everyone was like, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, before that, it's a medical diagnosis. Yes, Queen Butler.
Judith Butler.
But, like, this doctor guy is supposed to have existed before. We're never going to be academics, are we? Well, we'd be great academics. And be like, so basically, here's your Judith Butler lecture. Yas, queen! But like, before that, it was like, it's okay to medically diagnose somebody by the way they move. That is like an okay thing to do. The fuck? That's so recent.
It also just bothers me when people reduce gender to like, oh, this is a male way to perform and this is a female way to perform. And I think part of the reason why it bothers me is because I see truth in it, and I'm like, no!
Yeah.
Why?
But it's like, I always struggle with the concept of, like, campness, and people who associate campness with being gay. Why do we associate them so much? At what point is that also kind of learned behaviour? At what point is that, like...
Mm.
Like, there's so much... That's so behind. That feels like it's a decade.
But it also implies it's this really natural way to move, but we only really learn how to move from our parents. Like, there's no... Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you're acting gay. And it's
but
like,
do you think that we would have more observed our mothers and learnt from her rather than...
Gosh, I have absolutely no idea.
Do you know what? I think I used to sit more womanly and, like, walk more womanly, but I have no, like, balance, and I fall over. Like, Hannah had to find me today because I was lying in the grass because I got arse over tit on the way from the station and smashed my phone and my ankle.
But I have no...
So I had to start sitting like a man because I was like, this is the way I can sit upright.
So
I'm like, otherwise I will fall over. And I walk more like a guy now, but I'm like, because I have literally, I'm so clumsy. Because like walking like a woman isn't an option.
There's this picture of me and my mum and my sister. My sister is a baby and my mum is in bed breastfeeding her. And I'm sat on the floor with a doll lifting up my dress, and I'm 2 years old. And I'm pretending to breastfeed this doll because I see my mum breastfeeding my sister.
This idea of being scared... So this idea of invasion, so things invading your body all the time, this gene being passed through, and this fear of pregnancy that all the women have. And it's also like... So also like Callie, like being scared that she's pregnant, and she gets interviewed by the doctor, and he's like talking about stuff, and she's like, oh, I was just scared of getting pregnant. And he like chuckles and is like, well, there's no chance of that now. Because she can't have children. And it's like, what?
Tessie's never scared of pregnancy. But Desdemona is scared of Tessie's pregnancy.
Yeah, I think so. There's this sentence that I was like, bam, on page 114, for those of you following along in your textbook. this is when Desdemona's pregnant with Milton. Milton? Yeah, it must be Milton. And she says, pregnancy made her feel too much like an animal. It was embarrassing to be so publicly colonised. And it's that whole, like, because there's so much about them that's about their immigrant experience and so much about colonialism that I was like, oh, you're even being colonised by this idea of this gene that's been passed. So, I don't know, that made me feel really weird. And I was like, oh.
Because there's a lot of war in the book that happens as well.
I like how it's framed within actual history.
Yeah.
I actually genuinely had to look a person up. Because I was like, wait, is this a real person? And then they weren't. They were. I think it was the doctor. I was like, is this doctor? Like,
that doctor?
On a real person? And they weren't. It was a fiction. Rubbish. Like, it's a fiction. But there were probably people like him around at the time. But it was
I wanted to know how accurate the... I wanted to talk about... We didn't talk about religion.
Yes. How did we do that? I was going to be talking about race and then we got to...
Jimmy Zizmo. Let's talk about Jimmy Zizmo. Oh my gosh,
he is such an interesting, weird character.
Because he fakes his own death. And then starts the Black Power movement.
Yeah.
Is that... Did everyone else get that?
Yeah. And then, like,
then
why?
Ran off to become friends with Malcolm X.
But did he exist
when
as, like...
When you say it like that,
because
so
he
weird.
Wasn't Elijah Muhammad.
That's what happened.
He wasn't pretending to be
He's
Elijah
black.
Muhammad.
Was he black?
No,
Elijah
was,
Muhammad.
He wasn't black.
I'm
pretty
sure
he wasn't black.
He wasn't most irritated Turkish. About it.
He was darker than the Greeks because he was Turkish. So he, like, had darker skin, more Arab-looking. More Arab-Asian-looking.
But he wasn't even... How problematic is this?
So how does Desdemona not recognise his voice when she listens to his sermons, like, every single working day?
Yeah, I don't know.
That whole storyline was so pointless. Felt like a dream. I was like, what is happening? Why?
When Desdemona's doing the silkworming and the...
Is that real, though? Do those churches exist?
Well, the whole idea. Yeah.
Those race tensions, though.
Yeah, that was all very... real
the
but
church,
then, like, the, church...
The what's it called, the thingy of Islam, the why can't I remember this?
I don't remember either.
I don't know what you're trying to say, Lucy.
The actual faith exists.
Let me search it in my book. Let me join to find out. I'm just gonna
search
it in my
it's thing. Whatever. So but I want to know if that guy even actually existed, the theoretical
Jimmy's name.
Yeah, the original character that started
I don't know. It's Malcolm X Muslim. I don't know.
Yeah, he is called the something of Islam. So that's the I didn't even think that started in Detroit. So basically, I have no idea. Sorry, we are just frantically
Googling. I kind of
want
to go to Detroit now after reading this book.
He's from Detroit. I learned that from life.
I used his surname.
I searched the word Islam in this book. It's not coming up.
That's because they never name it, but it's the Nation of Islam. It's called the Nation of Islam. So what happens? That's a huge faith that grows up in the 1950s and 60s, run by this guy, the guy who ends up being the main guy, is called Elijah Muhammad. And this guy, whoever Jimmy Zizmo is pretending to be, apparently is the kind of like...
The Detroit version of him.
The pre-Elijah Muhammad who originates... It's implied that he originates the Nation of Islam.
Because then he
creates the Nation of Islam.
He flees again and then it
but
mentions...
The Nation of Islam is a huge part of like... modern cultural reference, because Malcolm X, when he was in prison, was converted to the Nation of Islam, and it was used as a real source of political engagement.
Yeah,
wow.
And they had loads of money. He weaves them into the history so obnoxiously.
That made me feel uncomfortable.
It was messy.
Well, that storyline or Jeffrey Eugenides weaving into the history stuff?
That whole storyline just made me feel really weird.
It was kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Jimmy Zizmo should have died on the ice.
Yeah.
Why didn't he just die
ice? No, I kind of like Jimmy Zizmo coming back. That was quite fun.
But then he comes back and then disappears and then that's it.
You're like,
I
like,
would have rather that...
You're like, oh, okay, what was the point in that?
Do you want to have final thoughts? Because I've got a little passage to lead final thoughts. But is there anything else you want to talk about?
What is your passage to lead final thoughts?
Okay, I'll find it. I'll just do it. Got a filter vicar. I'm like, I have a passage. Just close the...
Well, you were raised Christian.
So. I know. Still raising the roof. Okay.
Final thoughts with Lena.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not completely final thoughts, because obviously the last page has final thoughts. But this is my favourite bit that concluded the book for me. This is when I felt like the book finished. When it says, and it's the hopeful part that Callie's saying about her life, and she says, "And so a strange new possibility is arising. Compromised and an indefinite, sketchy, but not entirely obliterated. Free will is making a comeback. Biology gives you a brain. Life turns it into a mind." And I was like, for me, that encompassed the whole, is she biologically something or not? Is nature nurture an issue? Did this gene screw her up, or is it the making of her? And it's just kind of like, life turns it into a mind.
I feel like for Callie, for Cal, it's like none of the above. Like, nature makes her a boy, nurture makes her a girl, and then she takes that information and then actually just makes a strategic decision of which one is easier to live as.
Yeah.
And then goes, straight dude is easier than gay woman.
Yeah.
And then goes, okay, that's what I'll be.
I don't think it's easier, though, because she does run away and then...
No, I think the whole thing...
But maybe at the time she thinks it's easier.
I don't know. But to me, it's just like...
It's implied right at the beginning, when you may not mention that it's
Lena's
all...
just had a thought.
Yeah, go on, Lena.
When she escapes... Well, she runs away, and then she gets put in a freak show.
Yeah.
And she's an amphibian. She's underwater, which is like the whole, like, evolving from water to land...
Tadpole.
...genetic thing.
There's lots of tadpole imagery.
Yeah.
Froggy imagery.
Weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
I wonder what that means. We'll probably search, like, a dream book, like, dream interpretations of frogs, and I'm sure there'll be some explanation.
There's got to be some, like, Greek mythology as well, because all of their names are all named after, like, the Greek mythology is all
relevant.
It did
feel like a Greek tragedy. That's something that I did like about it.
Yeah.
I got that. I got what you were trying to do, and you did it, Jeff.
Yeah, I like that.
What were you going to say,
Final thoughts?
I was going to say... I don't remember. Something to do with the gender thing and picking genders. Who knows?
I didn't finish
the book.
Yeah.
The main thing about the gender thing is that it felt to me that he picked his gender rather than, like, felt. He wasn't like, I feel like I'm
I
a
remember
man.
Now. No, no, but he... It's implied at the beginning of the book when he's narrating... That he feels like a man. That he
well,
is
now
a man.
He does, because he's been living as a man for like 25 years.
Yeah.
And
maybe
the narrator's
it like that,
been living as a dude for so long. I don't know.
But he really implies that, like, Callie is not a part of him.
Oh, yeah, he's
like.
Yeah,
it's Callie was a period of his life.
It switches between like third person and first person.
It switches,
really, like,
yeah.
It's strange.
I'd love to know what intersex people who have read the book.
The thing is, can we talk about the narrator really briefly before we close?
Sure.
So the narrator's voice is, to me, felt godlike, because it's like this all-seeing, all-knowing narrator.
Who knew much more, or embellished much more, than he could ever know.
Because he can get...
Yeah, as well. Yeah. How did you know how your grandparents... Like,
copulated.
Copulated.
Yeah.
But,
like, he gets into the heads and the minds of what everyone is thinking at every point, at points where he wasn't even alive yet. And, like, especially the point that really I was like, for fuck's sake, really, that finally did it for me was when the car crash that Milton is in, where Milton dies, and he just, like, fully goes, and this is what Milton was thinking in those last moments. And you're like...
except that he probably wasn't, because he died.
And also, Cal didn't know that his dad died until he, like...
Yeah.
But I totally like the obsessiveness in the narration, in the sense
it is
that...
Creepy,
yeah, you
it's
would obsess
book.
Over... Yeah, but it's the obsession over the...
But
the
thing is that it
history.
Couldn't have been narrated by anyone else. Like, the book wouldn't have made sense if it was just an if it was a personaless narrator and everything was in third person. The book wouldn't have made sense that way. It had to be Cal.
Although, have you read The Book Thief? That's narrated by Death.
Love that.
If I had been Jeffrey's editor or agent,
you would have
Jeff. Could this be narrated by
the
Gene?
Ooh,
that would have been amazing. I would 100% read a book narrated by a gene. Could she be called Gene, G-E-A-N as well? Gene the Gene.
Oh, gosh.
Final thoughts.
Yeah. I think, so Virgin Suicides was my favourite books of all time. I think
I've never read it.
It's an untouchable masterpiece of fucking brilliance. But now I've built it up, so you probably won't enjoy it as much, because when somebody says something brilliant, it never works. But I think that was amazing. This was like, not, it was okay. I just didn't. It's some spectacular in bits. Like, I can tell that he's still a bit of a genius, but I just didn't think it held together as a whole book.
Yeah, it feels like an odyssey, as I've said multiple times, but like it was written at different points.
Yeah.
Or like there were rushed bits and slower bits. And
yeah.
It accelerates and decelerates really fast, and you can see that even in the narration and in the like style of writing.
Well, I should think maybe he's trying to make it kind of like Greek tragedy, but then also it still didn't feel...
It misses a beat somewhere. Yeah.
There's something that's not quite holding it together, and I'm not sure whether it's because the narration changes its focus through each generation. Like, imagine the same book, but all of it was from Desdemona's point of view. Still narrated by future Cal, but it's all, like, Desdemona, because she's alive through the whole thing.
Yeah. Mm. Desdemona was 100% she's my favourite
character.
Oh, yeah.
Best character.
Yeah.
Woman.
Best character.
I really
like funny
her.
Lines as well, if you want to hear some of those. But not really.
We'll save them for later.
Okay.
But I feel... I'm, like... very pleased I finished that book, even though I hated it at points.
I really kind of want to finish it more than I've wanted to finish all the others, because I feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah.
There's so much in it. This is the thing.
I've invested so much already. I may as well keep going.
It's just...
going on.
It's just... there's so much in it. That's the thing. There's so much. And...
it felt quite overwhelming, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Overwhelming,
I don't
know if that's good or bad. Good word.
But yeah.
Well, yeah, I definitely struggled with reading about incest while I was on a family holiday. I can tell you that now. And not just your classic family holiday, may I add. Family holiday where you're meeting second cousins, like great aunts. You know, the proper family holiday.
You're like, ooh, prospect.
In the heat.
Yeah. Ooh. On that note, we should definitely end.
I'm really glad that we live in 2016.
I'm really glad that we started and ended this podcast with incest.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you have any thoughts on Middlesex, then please let us know. If you want to make a video response reviewing the book, then tweet at us with the hashtag Banging Book Club.
And we'll add you to the playlist.
Add you to the joint playlist. We have exciting news about December's book.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Ooh. So, it is time to pick the book that we're going to be reading in December. At the beginning of the year, we said that December would be Reader's Choice. And so throughout the year, we've been collecting your suggestions on the Goodreads page, on video comments, on Twitter, and we had a ballot box at somewhere in the city where you could physically give us ideas.
So we had a lot of ideas,
basically. We had a lot of ideas, a lot to go through. And we've picked our favourite four, and we're going to be running a Twitter poll on my Twitter, that's Hannah's Twitter, me. they'll be running for, I don't know, like a week. It'll go live when this podcast goes up, and it'll be running for a week, and then basically the one with the most votes will be December's book, and hopefully that will give you enough time to get your hands on it.
And us.
Yeah. And for us to get
we
our
need
hands
more
on
time
it.
To read, clearly.
I still haven't found Men Are From Mars in any charity shops yet. Which
oh,
I
just bought it on Amazon.
That makes me feel like I'm funding the devil.
I know. But I'm going away.
Yeah, it's like, something you need.
I need it. I need to read it when I'm on holiday.
Thanks.
All right, so the four options are Juliet Takes a Breath by Gabby Rivera, How to Build a Girl by Catlin Moran, Carol by Patricia Highsmith, and The Boss by Abigail Barnett. So you can have a Google of those, look up reviews on Goodreads or Amazon or whatever, and then vote for your favourite. And then the one with the most votes will be reading in December.
What?
Also, whatever we don't read from this list,
potentially we'll pull through to next year.
Potentially we'll go on next year.
And we've got your huge, beautiful list of books as suggestions, so we're going to be looking through those when we think about next year's books
too. I'm really excited for next year, can I just
including say? Doing It by Hannah Witton, available for pre-order.
Gotta pay that rent.
Yeah. Gotta plug my own book about sex.
Yeah, we will be reading Hannah's book. I'm really excited.
I'm so nervous. There's so many personal stories.
It's gonna be great. We're gonna make you blush.
I can't wait.
Please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Yeah.
And leave us a review if you'd like to. That would be nice.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
We're not reading out people's names, are we?
No, there's none. No one's left a review.
We've not asked people to.
Since July. So leave us reviews because we're all really sad. I'm a bit broken today. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. I don't really know if there's any other housekeeping we have, and we can't think of any, so I'll put it in the video if there is.
If you want more housekeeping, go and get a brush and brush your house.
Yeah. We'll be there for you as you do it. Okay, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys.
We'll see you next month.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.